There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it! And it is! Peter Will!
Welcome, everyone, to From Witten to Rotterdam, an Aston Villa podcast. We're your hosts. My name is Eddie.
My name is Pascal.
And today we're joined by Rick, chairman of the California Lions Club. How are you doing today, Rick?
Great. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Oh, of course. Thanks for joining us. So we'll probably flip the show a little bit on its head today just because we are recording right after the game. Want to talk about it while it's fresh on our mind. But before we get to the Arsenal result, which, you know, I think we're all pretty happy about, we want to just quickly do a little recap of the West Ham game, which, you know, less positive thoughts. So, Rick, I'll start with you. You know, heading into that game, nervy results from Southampton at the weekend. How are you feeling about going facing the other claret blue team in the league?
Well, I think going into it, we all knew it was going to be a tough game, right? West Ham is in good form. But right off the bat, it just seemed like our guys were a step behind. The energy level was down. We didn't look like the same team. And so right from the beginning minutes of the game, I was thinking, oh gosh, this is going to be really hard. And sure enough, that energy level kind of stayed the same the whole time, even after going into the second half.
No, I mean, absolutely. It was, you know, I wouldn't say we were at our best against Southampton, but we were resolute in a way. But I think, you know, West Ham's in, I would say, like, the form of their Premier League lives at the moment. You know, yeah. I haven't seen them play this well. They're always a team who spends pretty big and has a decent enough looking squad, but they're putting it together well. So credit to Moyes. Pascal, I'll go to you real quick. You know, what were you thinking heading into the game? I know we talked about it a little last week, but we were feeling a little more bullish after the result against Southampton.
We did say a lot on WhatsApp and stuff like, these are the games that are going to define where we're going to finish in the Premier League. You know, are we actually serious about this Europa League challenge, or are we happy with mid-table? Do you know what I mean? Because we're not going to get relegated, let's face it. You know, there's teams that are far worse than us. So I think we're safe to say that we'll be here for at least another season. I looked at these two games, West Ham and Arsenal, and I was thinking, we need 4 points, really. Do you know what I mean? And we just weren't at it. As you said, we weren't at it at all. I have no complaints with the result at all. They were the better side. It was quite similar to the Leeds game. We just physically, they just had us all over the park. And I don't know if it's a lack of rotation due to games, but we just looked fatigued and lethargic.
No, 100%. And Rick, I mean, that's a good question, because I know the lack of rotation in the midfield has been, especially in this congested fixture list, like a big thing. Wondering what you were thinking about that when you saw the team sheet.
Yeah, you know, I was, the first thing I thought of, though, when I saw the energy level, I couldn't help but think, are there any residual issues related to that COVID outbreak we had, right? Energy level from players. Fortunately, that didn't show up today, but, you know, I was, the first thought I had is it looked like a team that was still trying to get out of or return to full health from that scare that they had.
Yeah, it felt like it was really kind of dwelling on us. And like you said, like, we just weren't really at it. I felt like a lot of the games are catching up. And that's one of the big things that a lot of the other teams who've had outbreaks have kind of talked about. You know, it's hard to keep full fitness after that and hard to return. I think a few folks have, you know, showed some real good resilience. I don't think Jack actually got it, but he's still, you know, been plucky as always. Target, I think, did have it and has actually recovered pretty well. But folks like McGinn and Barkley, yeah, gotta give him. No, we have a lot of Matt Target love on this show. But you know, I think McGinn and Barkley, you know, I'm not sure who actually in the camp really got it, but it's hard to say. But you'd imagine those two were affected, because for as much good as they do, and I think both of them did some good things today, especially, it has looked like it's worn on them a little bit. So thinking back, you know, go 2-0 down, what I would say, a couple avoidable goals, you know, not tracking. I think Martinez got his hands to a couple. But I was surprised to see just how dynamic West Ham looked all over the field, especially Jesse Lingard. So I'll open it up to both of you. Like, were you expecting him to be as match sharp, or even to start, just knowing he hadn't played football in however many months? I think he had one start this season in the Cup.
Yeah, I'm actually not surprised. I mean, there's always a question on, you know, how he's going to actually look when he, as he starts the match there for them, and or starts his his career there with them, I guess. And I just wasn't shocked. I said, oh gosh, you know, I was so concerned about our defense was just getting, we were getting peppered with shots and we were able to bend but not break. But then you just had this feeling because of our, seemed like we were a step behind getting the balls, which we normally haven't been this season. We were, that's one of the biggest changes that I've noticed this season with the team that we have now. We're a step quicker to the ball, that we really want that ball. But in the 50-50 matchups, we were just getting late to balls the entire game.
Yeah, I knew before the game, as soon as I saw Jesse Lingard on the team sheet, I just had this image in my head of him doing the flute celebration in front of the after he scored. You know, and lo and behold, he was dancing away after the third goal went in. He was man of the match, no question about it. He was absolutely outstanding. Gareth Southgate was then, you'd think our number 10 would try to step up to the plate to, put his name in the window for the Euros. Right. Unfortunately, it was the number 10 on the other side who did all the damage. I think I was saying to someone earlier, I was a bit annoyed with Dean Smith because it was clear to see that Jack on the left wasn't working because they doubled up with Soufal and Fredericks. And the two moments they moved into the right, at the end of the first half, we created a good chance. And in the second half, we scored the goal from it. So, whereas Moyes, what I noticed is at the start of the second half, Lingard played more on the left and did way more damage down there. Like, just little things like that, that I feel that Smith sometimes takes his time to adjust to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, and you've heard that a lot during the season too, right? That subs coming in late and wondering, why weren't we doing this, a few minutes earlier, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be my Smith as well. Just adapt to what's happened around. If it's not working, then change it. Obviously, we're not qualified football managers, but we can see when something's not quite working or something could be better, or when we think someone should be off the pitch, whether or not that's right is to be seen. But it's just so late. If you look at his subs, normally, okay, today was a little bit different, but you're talking 80th minute.
Right.
And it's not all three subs. We don't use the full squad. It's one sub or so on. Do you know what I mean? So it's a hard one because we're winning games and we're playing really well, but it is probably having an effect on the squad long-term in terms of tiredness levels and fatigue.
Absolutely. And, it was one of those days where I think you can kind of pin it on both things. Like, I think the squad looked a little tired, but I also just think West Ham were just so, so on it. And, credit where credit is due, Jesse Lingard, like we were saying, just like absolute masterclass. It was clear he just wanted to be on the pitch after his long layoff. And even just the way they set up, I think Ryan Fredericks and Coufal kind of doubling up on Grealish down that side, I think was a lot to handle.
I know, they just closed Jack down on the left-hand side. I mean, they really had a great game plan going into the game.
Yeah, and, especially without the legs in the middle, too, having Souček and Rice kind of sitting there a little deeper, I think really stifled an already tired Ross Barkley. And, a McGinn who's, not looked up to it since the return from our little bit of a scare there with COVID. So glad everyone's healthy. I hope they do sort of work their way back, especially with a week-long break coming up, but at the same time, wasn't the boys' day. I don't want to dwell on it too much, though. We want to try and keep things positive, especially with positive things to talk about. So I guess the last question I'll quickly ask, I think he's due a day off after all the times he's bailed us out, but Emi Martinez, not his day. Rick, how do you think he could have done a little better with those two goals?
I was really surprised on the goals that got past him, because they're normally goals that he would have stopped. But, he's been so brilliant the whole season. I mean, he's the signing of the season, which I'm sure you guys have probably talked about over the last many weeks. And sometimes you'll have a bad day, and it was a bad day for him. He's an amazing keeper. I think physically, his agility for his size, it's just been such a great change for Villa. So yeah, I think it was just a very difficult game for him, and the defense broke down in front of him. He normally has a good back line to in front of him to give him protection, but everything kind of seemed to break down in that game for us. The one thing that I notice always, the times that we've had difficult games like this, West Ham, when you start in the second half, when you start seeing Jack Grealish just keeping the ball and keeping it at his feet and not looking to pass. It starts, I start having these flashbacks to previous years, right? When we only had like one person that we could go to. And I said, oh gosh, here we go. You know, we're going back to last season's team where we're, Jack is trying to take it on all by himself. And the whole team play concept kind of goes out the window. And I, that's when I knew we were kind of doomed.
I just think back to, I forget what season it was. I think it was the year we had those like pinstripe Macron Dapovet. I don't remember the year. But we were playing Crystal Palace and Benteke took it down and ran through like five people like close to the halfway line and then just put it away. Like a really clean slot, but like it was a terrible season. You know, we did some good things. We made it to the FA Cup final, but like we were not a good team. And we definitely overperformed in a lot of different ways. You know, I think it came to get what?
I think it was 2014, I think.
Oh,
I
remember the year before that.
So I remember it well, 1-0 at Selhurst Park. And it was like the only goal of like a terrible game. I remember the goal well. And he like tackled Dan, I think, in the middle of the park. Just like ran through and then like slid it bottom corner, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think about that and I think about this year. And, you know, we don't have a team where we need anyone to be doing that. It's lovely when it does happen sometimes. And, you know, Grealish will put together a run or two like that every year. But, you know, it's a bit more of a team game. So, Rick, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, when Jack does start having those sort of moments of, like, I need to put the team on my back a little bit, especially with, you know, people always zoning in on him in the previous years when he was a little bit more of the game plan. I do think it, you know, is a recipe for disaster, and it's proven that this season when he holds onto the ball a little too long. But quickly, you know, don't want to dwell too much on this. And again, we want to talk about the good things that happened this weekend. So quickly, if you can even name one, your man of the match. I'll start with you, Rick.
Oh, gosh, man it's of early, the match. It's early. Lingard. I mean, I'd have to go with Lingard when West Ham. I mean, he was amazing. We just struggled the whole game. I don't have a man of the match for Villa that game. I mean, I loved it that Ollie got back on the score sheet and that helped, but then we gave up a goal right at, I mean, just minutes after that. So it really just deflated that whole goal that he got. But yeah, Lingard.
It's a tough one. It was a collective stinker, to be honest with you. I'd probably say Grealish, you know, it's a brilliant pass for the goal, but other than that, yeah, that's all I've got to say in that game, I think.
Yeah, I'll go with, I don't usually give it to an opposition player, but I think Lingard deserves it. Like, if I'm going to give credit where credit is due, he's the one. And if we had to pick one for us, I think Ollie took the goal well, but, you know, he ran his socks off. It's a typical performance, workmanlike. But we'll move on to greener pastures here, and we'll start again with that man Ollie in a second. But, you know, heading into Arsenal this week, knowing they had a bit of a stinker themselves in the midweek against Wolves with a questionable red card and, you know, Leno getting sent off as well for, I don't know if you guys watched it back, a weird move to say the least, like palming the ball well outside the box. But heading into this game, knowing they were down a few folks, but have also picked up a little bit of form in the last few weeks. I'll start with you, Rick. You know, how are you feeling heading into this Arsenal game?
You know, Arsenal, they're kind of an interesting team, you know. I mean, they have a history of being a strong team, but recent seasons, you know, I'm not sure whatever to expect match to match from them. They could be playing a really great team and play tough, or they could just kind of fall apart. And especially with all the changes that they had to deal with right in their lineup this week, I wasn't sure what to expect. I was expecting us to come out strong though, and we can talk about it more as we move forward, but I didn't expect this game to be this close, truthfully. I thought we would have scored at least a second goal, and we had chances. But yeah, for me, Arsenal is just a tough team to judge. From week to week, you're not sure what's going to show up.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. It's just a case of what Arsenal are going to turn up on the day. And luckily, we got the drab Arsenal today. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't confident, to be fair. I'll be honest, I wasn't confident. I was confident we'd score. I just didn't think we'd shut them out. You know, obviously we knew that Leno and David Luiz wouldn't be there, and obviously David Luiz, everyone has their opinions on, because he has a calamity in him as well. But Leno's obviously a very, very good goalkeeper. So I knew we'd get a chance to score in this one. But I thought it'd be a score draw. It would maybe even lose, you know, because I thought we would look that tired against West Ham, and especially seeing the lineup as well. Like, he made one change. I'm surprised he didn't drop McGinn or Barkley, who I thought were quite poor against West Ham. So I was quite surprised it was Douglas Luiz who missed out.
Yes, I was totally surprised for that.
Really surprised. I knew Traore would come back in for El Ghazi. I saw that apparently El Ghazi was one of the players who had COVID, so maybe he's still recovering from it as well. And one thing I read, actually, just quickly, the last thing I'll say about the West Ham game is someone mentioned to me that apparently Martinez has had the strikers in training to practice shots going across him on goal because he was that upset with his two mistakes. So credit anywhere where it's due. You know, it's good to see that he responds to his, he admits that he makes mistakes, he's trying to respond to them. But yeah, when I saw the lineup, I wasn't confident. You know, there was, we all wanted rotation. We thought that Samson would be involved in some part, but yeah. And yeah, I mean, very quickly, we'll talk about it more, but I thought we looked quite labored in this one as well, to be honest with you, but it was a flat game in general.
No, I fully agree. It was one of those going into it where, you know, you think if we, and again, going back to squad rotation, I kept thinking to myself, if Smith freshens it up a little bit, we're going to have enough. But, you know, when I saw Nakamba come in for Luiz of all folks, so I actually thought, you know, like maybe not to like his normal standard, but like to a certain degree, like has played pretty consistently throughout the last few games. I was surprised, especially with Barkley and McGinn being sort of a little bit more of the legs in the middle of the field, the engine room, if you will. So, yeah, I was surprised. I mean, Rick, going into it, especially when you saw the team sheet, like seeing Nakamba being the one to come in, how are you feeling?
Well, you know, when I heard that Nakamba was in the lineup, I immediately thought, okay, it's going to be Luiz and Nakamba, right? And then I looked at the full sheet, I go, oh gosh, Luiz is a sub today. And it kind of really threw me off. I mean, I knew that the game that Nakamba played recently, he played a really strong game. So I like the depth we have in midfield. So changes there. I felt, okay, you know, I don't know if we're going to get to talk. Oh, I guess we're going to be talking about signings later on. But my bigger concerns are on the defensive line, on the ends left and right, you know, in terms of depth. I feel so much better about the depth we're gaining. I know we have still a ways to go, but the depth that we've gained this year so far, just to be able to bring a quality player off the bench if we lose somebody or need to change, is a big change for us, at least in recent years, to have that kind of depth. So I was actually feeling okay with the comeback coming in because he played so well in his last outing.
Yeah. I mean, I think Nakamba, he's a pretty divisive player. I have a lot of time for Nakamba in terms of just like, I think he just does like a really useful role. But at the same time, I think what worried me a little bit more was having to, like, I would say like a bit more forward thinking folks and folks who've also showed, you know, some leggy performances the last few games. So I'm with you, Rick. I actually thought when I saw Nakamba initially, I was like, I must be reading this wrong. Like Luiz is definitely like starting next to him and they kept Barkley or they kept one of those two.
Yeah, but I thought McGinn dropped off or something.
Yeah. Pascal, so I mean, heading into it, especially, you know, you mentioned you were not feeling too confident. How are you feeling after kickoff, especially with our very quick little sucker punch? I'll call it a sucker punch.
You know, funny story, actually. So I went to watch it at the pub with my friend who's an Arsenal fan, and he took ages getting ready. So when I got there, I got there as they kicked off, and I really needed the bathroom, like desperately. So I ran to the bathroom. As I came back out, they were kicking off. I was like, what the hell? So I missed the only goal of the game, and then it was just like a drab affair for the rest of the game. Obviously, they showed like clips of the goal again. But yeah, I was delighted with how the game started, obviously. You can always say like you can score too early in games sometimes, but other than the free kick, Arsenal never really troubled us throughout the game in terms of like clear cut chances or anything. So yeah, it was a great start, absolutely great start, and you know, we held on, so happy days.
Yeah, Rick, what do you think of Ollie taking his goal that way, and even more so, I think more credit's almost due to Traore coming at tracking back, pipping the ball off of, I think it was, yeah,
that
Cedric.
Was an amazing pass. That was an amazing pass by Traore. Off the outside of his foot, got it all the way across into the box. And Ollie, like always, is always in the right place. I mean, even when he doesn't score, knowing that we have a striker up front like that, that that can be in the position that he needs to be in. His movement away from the ball is amazing. So, but yeah, I was really surprised that we scored that early. And like Pascal just mentioned, I go, God, I hope that wasn't too early, but we'll take it. And we were able to survive the rest of the game, but we did have some other chances. I was disappointed that we didn't take advantage of a couple of those other finishes that we had opportunities for during the game.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that second part, especially, you know, I think we had every opportunity to put the game away, and, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. I think Matt Ryan comes under a lot of criticism. I think he held his own on his debut for Arsenal today. I think he made some good saves. I also think, you know, there was a little bit of a lack of clinicism, if you will, from some of our forward thinking players. And I think the one I want to really come on to is that Traore opportunity in the first half. You know, I think he gets a little bit of a pass because of, you know, his wonderful play beforehand. And we did come away with the result, but I know I was silently, my wife was busy doing something else. So I was like very silently screaming in the living room. So, you know, I'll go on to Pascal real quick. Pascal, how did you respond in the pub surrounded by other people? I'd imagine some Arsenal fans as well.
I was a bit annoyed. You know, obviously in hindsight now, it doesn't really matter because we won the game. But if we'd drawn that game 1-1 and they scored late on, that would be the moment that we'd all be talking about. Because it's great link-up play with Barkley and Traore, and the turn from Traore is just exquisite. And if it goes, we're talking about it, it's one of the best goals we scored this season. If it goes in, but you know that situation, you're just thinking just smash it into the bottom corner or go between the legs or something, you know. Because Matt Ryan wasn't going to ground, so I don't know why of all the finishes he could have done, he tried to do the chip. But that's what makes Traore because he's known for doing the unexpected thing. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I was, frustrated, but obviously now reflecting back on it, it's all good.
It's definitely much easier to look at it post-game. But it was just holding on to that single goal lead, right, all the way to the end, thinking, oh, gosh. Keep thinking about these opportunities we missed. I like that strike that Jack finally got off. That was a good, solid one. Fell right straight to the keeper.
No, I mean, it was one of those moments I kept thinking to myself, like, I almost want to tweet out on the podcast account, like, oh, I hope we don't come to rue this. And I was like, I don't want to be the one to jinx it. I'm going to just hold my tongue here until afterwards and then complain to myself if something does happen. But luckily, you know, it did. Nothing too bad came from it, given circumstances. One moment I did think we were going to get shafted on, though. I know Arsenal had I wouldn't call it a big shout, but I think, you know, Mikel Arteta might, for the red card there, you know, Saka gets away, Cons is going. Just real quick, in your opinion, guys, goal scoring chance, is that a red card, or do you think Target was going to get across? I think it would have been a soft one if he gave it away, and I was happy common sense prevailed.
I don't know. I was looking at the replay, and when they showed Cons actually being the player that was fouled, I think they got the call wrong completely, but fortunately it didn't, we didn't end up getting penalized by that, you know, later on, but Konza was the one who got hit first looking at the replay. So I was, but you know, a referee is how many yards away? He's calling these, and I mean, he's not going to be perfect. So that was my eye. I mean, we're fortunate to see the replays.
Yeah. I mean, six of one, half a dozen of the other. And I didn't really think it was a foul either, to be honest with you. It would have been interesting if the ref had given a red card to see what VAR would have done. But yeah, Ultimately, we'll never know, because I don't think they would have, personally, I don't think they would have overturned it, to be honest with you. So in that aspect, you could say we, you know, luckily the referee made a good decision on our part and we got away with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first half, outside of a few half chances, and I will say, like, an incredible save by Emmy off the free kick, which, yeah. Oh, man, talk about bouncing back. Like Rick was saying a little bit before, talk about bouncing back after, you know, a rough day out and having another just stalwart game. You know, the half ended with a little bit of ended, you know, nervy at times, but I think, you know, comfortable in a Villa way, if you will. You know, we're not doing too much, but at the same time, I feel like that's about as comfortable as Villa will ever allow me to be as a fan outside of like playing Fulham or Newcastle this year. So, but heading into the second half, you know, I was, and I know I was talking about this in the group chat with Pascal and a few other folks, I was pretty much expecting that we were going to freshen things up because it did start to look again, just like that Southampton game, just like the West Ham game. We were starting to look a little leggy, and some of the changes Arsenal were making were, you know, starting to pay off. You know, Odegaard came on a little bit later. I think Aubameyang gave them a little bit of a different something. I think Pepe actually looked really lively for them, despite, you know, the criticism he comes under. So the fact that we waited and before Trezeguet and Ramsey came on, first of all, Rick, I'll start with you. Like, would you have freshened things up a little bit sooner? Obviously, hindsight is 2020 now, but also, like, were those, would those have been the subs you would have made?
That's a great question. That's a great question. In terms of timing, I think I would have made those changes a little sooner. But in terms of the subs, you know, I've really liked what I've seen from Ramsey this year. For such a young guy, I think he's played really consistently, and he really hasn't made a ton of mistakes. He even had a shot right toward the end of the game, and I've really enjoyed watching him come on. I don't see him as this young academy, you know, player coming into the academy where he's become a regular sub on the first team. And I really like what I've seen from him so far this year. And having those fresh legs earlier, I think, would have been nice to see energy away, because I was desperately looking for a second goal. Yeah, 1-0 leads against any team, I am totally uncomfortable with that. And I really thought we had a second goal in us, but we tended to look like be focused on defending in the second half, which we did a great job of, but it always makes me nervous because I've seen us too many times, and maybe it's again flashbacks to the past where I feel like we've always settled in the past. We used to always settle into these modes of trying not to lose versus trying to win. And it makes me a little nervous. But other than that, yeah, I think the subs could have come in a little bit sooner, like we talked about earlier. But again, we're not, again, like you guys have both said, you know, we're not Premier League managers or anything close to that.
Yeah, I thought Ross Barkley could have maybe come off about 10 minutes earlier, to be honest with you. I think he looked really tired. I'm quite happy that we've got a full week off before our next Premier League game with no FA Cup in the middle of it. So, you know, players get longer recovery and stuff, and we're hopefully feeling a bit more fresh before Brighton away next week. Yeah, I'm quite surprised you bought Ramsey on and not Sanson. Really surprised. Where does that put him in the pecking order? We'll find out in due course, but I'm really surprised he didn't play Sanson there. Ramsey was good when he came on. He had you could tell he's a confident player because he had that shot. Trezeguet was screaming at him as well after he missed. Again, hindsight, you know, because if they score straight after, because I think it was quite late in the game, that's another moment we can reflect of missed chances. Do you know what I mean? You're right. I completely agree with what you say. 1-0 lead, especially when you score after 55 seconds or whatever it is. They're horrible. They're horrible to watch. Do you know what I mean? And I was just saying to my friends, like, it's got an equaliser. They're going to score. Because we sat back quite a lot, especially in that first half, and it just looked like the goal was coming at some point. And when they made their subs, I thought Odegaard was brilliant when he came on. He made some like really good passes and stuff. He looks like a real good player. And I thought they were going to break us down. But, you know, the back five again, all five of them have been like incredible all season. So, yeah, all in all, very, very good day.
Yeah. So I just want to isolate two quick moments before we kind of get our man of the match and move on real quick. But I just want to quickly go back to... I quickly want to go back to Barkley coming off. You know, I don't know if you guys saw it. You know, he was having a little bit of a fit on the sideline, and it seemed like Dean Smith wasn't too pleased with him afterwards. And, you know, to some degree, I think I really like seeing that fight, that desire to stay on the pitch from our players. But at the same time as well, you know, you never want to see someone disagreeing with the manager. So before I move on to the last one, like, guys, just really quick, what'd you make of that little sequence, that little exchange?
Well, I saw it more, my impression, and was not that different than I forget which game it was, a few games back, right when Jack got pulled out of a game late, and he had that dejected look on his face that he truly didn't want to come off. I see it more like what you were saying initially, that it's just this fight and fire that these guys have. I think that's his instant reaction as a footballer, that he wants to stay in and play, right? And but I think looking back at it, I'm sure he understands why the manager did what he did, but they just love to be out there contributing to the team, that they want to be on the pitch. So that's all I took it as. Nothing too serious.
Yeah, I'm completely the same. It was just passion. You know, it was just disappointing to be coming off. And footballers do it all the time. So yeah, nothing more.
Yeah, and I think the last sort of isolated moment I wanted to kind of drop, or lack thereof rather, is, you know, we were talking about subs a little bit. I'm really happy that Trez came on, because I think he provides a little bit more of that sort of defensive nous down the wing. And I think he put in a really good shift in the moments he was on. I think Ramsey, like you said, energy, you know, did some good things. But I will say, with a few folks on yellow cards, especially Nakamba, who, you know, love Nakamba, he goes in hard. Were you guys surprised not to see one last change, be it Sanson or Luiz, kind of just close the game out? Or, you know, do you think we were riding our luck a little bit there?
Yeah, that's a great question. How many yellow cards did we end up with at the end? Were there three players on yellows?
I think three.
Nakamba and Konter, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when things get a little dicey, right? When we start talking about depth and who else we have. And I would have loved seeing Luiz come on or for Nakamba. But, you know, I think he was just playing with so much confidence that, you know, Smith just wasn't concerned that a second yellow was going to come his way. And I totally support Dean Smith. Sometimes I don't really understand, especially going back to the timing of substitutes and stuff like that. But he isn't where he is if he doesn't know, or doesn't have some good reasons of what why he's doing what he's doing. I just don't fully understand it all the time. And I'm learning this year that I trust him. I might not understand it, but I'm trusting his moves. So I was okay when the comp is staying in.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised. I'm quite surprised Luiz didn't come on, to be honest with you. But as I thought, you know, when they were pressing at the end, I thought there's a risk of a red card for Nakamba or Konter, but luckily for us that didn't happen.
Yeah, I was speaking of Konter, those instances when he went down toward in the first half, I mean, he's one of those key people in defense. I thought, oh gosh, I hope he's not seriously hurt, right? So fortunately that wasn't a huge problem for him, but that's where I think our depth, our ongoing need for adding depth, you know, can show up. But fortunately, we haven't had huge injuries that have really knocked us back, which is great.
I'm knocking on wood off camera.
right. I mean, I thought the Barkley injury early on, you know, earlier in the season, I thought, oh, this is really going to tell us a lot about what our depth is like on this team. And, you know, we played through that great. And I was just so happy. It was such a different kind of feeling than, you know, all it took was a couple of injuries for us to really set us back as a team in previous, more recent years. And our depth has really been, has shown that it's gotten stronger, but we still have a ways to go, I think, in a few other places.
Absolutely. I do think, you know, it's selective depth. You know, we're going to get on to transfer stuff really, really quick, but, you know, you see it in certain positions. I think our midfield is starting to look like pretty stout in a good way. We haven't necessarily rotated in the same way given our numbers, but I think on the right wing we're stocked as we need to be. So yeah, I think, you know, besides a few shortcomings, I'd say at the back and, you know, up front especially, I do think there's more depth than I think any of us would have assumed coming into the season, especially with a few players surprising. El Ghazi coming in out of the cold and contributing, you know, it's been a joy to watch. But really quickly, just so we can move on, Pascal and Rick, who is your man of the match for this Arsenal game?
You know what I love about these questions, man of the match? This season, it's like you have to really think about it. It's not some instant decision, right? There's so many people you can name. Go ahead, Pascal.
I was thinking about it all the way home, and it's Tyrone Mings for me. I thought he was outstanding. Colossal. One of his best games this season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say Tyrone Mings as well. He was able to, I mean, he got his head on the ball constantly and was exactly where he needed to be.
So yeah,
it was a great game today.
It was a calmness there. There was this, you know, just a real sort of assuredness that I appreciate. But I'm going to go with Martinez just because I do think he's made a few quick stops that were like pretty important. I think he commanded the box really well. And, you know, he just instills that extra confidence of folks like Mings and Konza and, you know, even Target, who I thought had a phenomenal game, Cash, and go out and, you know, do the things they need to do. But I also just want to give special mention to Ollie Watkins. I know I was talking about this in the preview week last week, but bagged his, got into double figures. It only took him 21 games in terms of the Premier League. Which is a phenomenal achievement for someone coming up from the championship. And he did it against his boyhood club, which, you know, if I'm going to get any predictions right, I'm happy I got the score wrong and that one right. Because good for him. Good on Ollie. He deserves it. He's been working so hard for us, and he had a great game. So just want to move on real quick. You know, deadline day has come and gone. Villa stand pat at the end. A few outgoings. You know, Sanson came in. He hasn't quite gotten up to speed yet. Hasn't showed, you know, everything he has. But I think that's also just been due to fixture congestion. Smith hasn't really had a full like period of training to really get him up to speed, and I understand that. You know, he's coming, language barrier, XYZ. Really quick though, you know, we did leave ourselves a little short. We sent some folks out. Connor Hourihan, for instance, is bagged 3-3 for Swansea, and he's looking great. A lot of other people are getting time. Do you think there was business still to be done, given circumstances? I'll start with Pascal and then move on to Rick, because, you know, we did talk about a little bit of depth missing, especially I'd say in frontal areas. Hearing Wesley is going to be out for, you know, a good portion more. That leaves us Keenan Davis, Traore in a pinch, and Ollie. So what do you guys think, especially considering where we're at this season and what we're pushing for?
It's hard to say, really, because you can't – everyone can say we need another striker. I would have loved Josh King personally, as we spoke about many times in this podcast. But it's hard to – is there really going to be a situation when all three of your strikers are going to get injured for a prolonged period of time? Hopefully not. So I can see why they didn't, you know, especially after splashing out 15 million on Sanson as well. But, you know, it does beg the question now, if Ollie Watkins does get injured, what, we're a bit in trouble. You know, let's face it, no one trusts Keenan Davis to even score probably 5 goals, let alone like, you know, 10 or whatever we'd need across the rest of the season. So yeah, maybe a little bit disappointed we didn't get Josh King on loan, but you know, hopefully Ollie Watkins can stay fit. He has a good injury record as well, touch wood. So yeah,
I had the same concerns up front that Pascal just described, and again, knocking on wood that Ollie stays healthy. Yeah, I was it must be a tough road coming back for Wesley, having been gone so long, that I think even if he was coming back earlier, it would take him a little time getting up to speed. And I was hoping that we get another addition to support Ollie. Because, you know, despite having his 10 goals, there's so much that he does, right, off the ball, that he's taken so much weight off of other players, especially Jack, right, in terms of being a threat, that teams have to pay attention to somebody there. There have been seasons before where we weren't sure where our goals were going to come from. And now we have multiple, if you look at it, right, our score sheet, and we have multiple players that are scoring for us. And Ollie, even if he doesn't score in a game, he draws so much attention from the defense, from the other team, that it opens things up for our other guys. So, yeah, really hoping he stays healthy. And I also have concerns about, though we haven't run into a problem yet, is our left and right back situation. I mean, Matty Cash and Target are just amazing. But then I'm concerned if one of those guys gets hurt, who do we have coming in behind them? Hopefully we don't have to deal with that, but there's still some depth we could add there as well.
No, I'm 100% on board. I personally think Gilbert heading out was a mistake. I mean, I understand why it's happening. Elmo is such a fixture in the dressing room. Like, he has 6 months left in his contract. He wasn't going to get usurped there. And I do think he adds some like seniority and organizational nous as sort of a versatile backup who can come in and still like be steady. I did see something though when Gilbert went out to Strasbourg that Smith expected him to come back and compete for that backup role, with what I assume is probably Kessler, the youth guy who's, you know, been impressive for the under 23s. But we'll see if that's just paper talk. We'll see if, you know, if he plays well, he's going to try and get a permanent move away so he can, you know, hopefully lock down a starting space. But it'll be interesting to see. And everyone knows that I'm on Team Anthony Robinson if Fulham go down. So well-documented American bias here. But we'll move on to our preview because luckily we have a little bit of time to breathe, decompress. We don't have to worry about a Wednesday game. One to worry about next week, though, is Brighton. And, you know, Brighton's come onto some form in the last little bit. So especially after a disappointing outing against the Seagulls earlier in the season. I'll start with you, Rick. You know, what are you expecting out of these guys? Because I think last time I checked, they were up on Burnley today. They had some really amazing results against Liverpool and Tottenham. Pretty much they've gotten themselves out of a relegation scrap. I think the bottom three is more or less solidified unless Burnley really falter. So, yeah, how are you thinking about Brighton?
You know, I think it's gonna be another tough game for us. And like Pascal, both of you were saying, I'm just so happy that we have some days off, you know, before that game. And I think it's going to be a tough game. I know they're, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the diversity of players scoring. They don't quite have the diversity of scorers that we do, which is one, I think, is a weakness for them. You know, I mean, Mape, right, has the most goals, I think, on their roster right now. But like you say, they're coming into form, and any team like that coming in, and we're playing there. I think it's going to be a tough match for us. And I think we need to stay at the same energy level that we have been going into what we came into with this Arsenal game, and think about what happened. Keep in our recent memory what happened against West Ham, that we need to stay focused from the get-go. You know, we saw what happens when today, right, when a team's maybe is not focused completely at the start of the game, right, you give up an early goal, and that could be the difference.
Yeah, I think Brighton are a really good side. I think they're unlucky to be where they are on the table because I don't think their performances reflect their points tally. I don't really know how they play. It's really difficult to actually analyze them because they have so many different systems. Sometimes to do four at the back, three at the back. You know, sometimes Ben White's in midfield, sometimes he's at the back. You never really know what you're going to get, but possession-wise, they're very possession-oriented team, and they're very difficult to play against, as we found out at Villa Park, although we should have got at least a draw. You know, VAR screwed us over on that day, unfortunately, but it's a very tough game. Very, very tough game. I'd probably be happy with a point. They're on fire. They've just drew with Burnley. Okay. 1-1, but they're on fire at the moment, you know, especially at the back. You know, just beat Liverpool and Spurs, so it's going to be a really, really tough game. We'll have to definitely be at our best for sure.
Yeah, and I look at that team sheet. I mean, Lamptey's been injured, Welbeck's been injured, so hopefully they stay out a little bit longer because those are two guys who I don't love coming up against, especially Welbeck last time. You know, still frustrated about that goal, but just looking at their team sheet, you know, all I can think about is like physicality for a team that like I just never think of as that physical. Like, you got Lewis Dunk, you got Adam Webster, even Dan Byrne, who's playing kind of as a wing back, is like a big imposing guy. So, and Bissouma, I think, does a really good job cleaning up in the middle. He's a really, really strong DM for them. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I think you put up a really good point before, though, you know, they're not a team that scores all over the pitch. I think if it's not coming from Mape, Lamptey when he's healthy, or I think, you know, what's his name? Trossard has gotten amongst the goals when he's come in. I think it's they're a pretty one-dimensional outfit going forward, but they just hold you, and, you know, their defense can chip in when they do. They're good on set pieces. So, yeah, I'm going to make everyone stick their necks out a little bit before. But before I do that, I'm going to quickly ask, you know, key matchups for the day as we head into this one. Rick, I'll start with you.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting if people are going to be watching. I was surprised, actually, that teams haven't been watching how West Ham played us and how they were able to strategize against Jack Grealish. And it'd be interesting to see if Brighton makes some changes to adjust to do something similar. But we'll see on that day. So I think how Brighton as a team defensively match up against Jack Grealish.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've seen they've got like Solly March, I think, is out for the season. And Lamptey, and is obviously a very good player as well. And he, I think, will be out he ran the show at Villa Park, in my opinion. When we played him earlier in the season, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And I think their backup, that Veltman, I think he might be injured as well. So, yeah, it's going to be how they deal with Grealish. He's obviously our main danger man. And they're a threat from set pieces. They've got a lot of height. Lewis Duncan, Webster and Dan Byrne, I think 6'7" or something crazy like that as well. So, yeah, it's going to be another physical game. And we struggle a little bit in the physical games this season. So we'll have to definitely be at our best.
100%. And, you know, I look at that lineup. I think for me, it's just going to be, you know, how are we going to be able to get behind that defense? Because there is just, they just crowd. And, you know, they do a good job of really, like, sitting back, you know, they don't sit back. I think they like you said, Pascal, like they're a possession-based team. They like to have the ball. But like I think when they do get on defense, they get numbers back and they are really good at staying compact. So it'll be interesting. But, you know, as always, I'm going to make everyone stick their neck out. Score predictions. And if you're feeling so bold, goal scorers. I'll start with you, Rick.
Well, I'm thinking the scoreline is going to be similar to what we just had with Arsenal. I'm predicting a 1-0 victory, and I really see Ollie score being the goal scorer. I see his rhythm clicking now in the last few games, and he did have that little stretch there where he had chances and had misses, but I feel like he's getting his rhythm now back. So I'm looking forward to seeing him on the score sheet again.
Yeah, I think it's going to be another tight game as well. Maybe like a 1-1. I know it sounds a bit negative. I just think we'll struggle a little bit because they're a good side. I say a 1-1. I think Ollie will probably do the damage again. You know, funnily enough, since I've took him out of my fantasy football team, he's got like 3 goals in 4 games. So I must have been the jinx that, you know, that cursed at the early parts of the season. So glad to see he's doing well.
Don't captain him this week. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 to the good guys. I think Ollie is going to keep his form up. You know, he's been playing really well. And, you know, I think there's going to be some rotation. I do think Traore is going to bag, though. You know, I look at their fullbacks. I look how tricky he is. And, you know, between backups and Dan Byrne, who's not the most mobile. He's a big dude, but he's not the most mobile. I think we're going to cause them some problems there. And for them, I think Mape is going to score, get in someone's face, be a nuisance, as he always seems to be doing. All right. So that's it for our talk about the game. But, you know, I think now is the perfect time to jump into our global villain section. And Rick, thank you so much again for joining us all the way from sunny California, all the way up in the Bay. It's early for you, so we appreciate it even more. You know, 3 hours behind us here in New York, and, you know, I want to say 11 hours behind Pascal over in Dubai. So it's we appreciate you, you know, getting up a little early for us. But, you know,
I was up early already. 4:30 kickoff in the morning here for the Arsenal.
Made the coffee, made the breakfast. He's good to go. So, you know, you are the chairman of the California Villains, but, you know, as we were talking a little off air too, there is multiple branches of, Lions clubs in California, down in LA, down in San Diego. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the California Villains, how it came to start and how it sort of branched off as you guys as the sort of brainchild behind, you know, all these Villa fan clubs up and down the state.
Yeah. Happy to share our story. We started as the California Lions in 2009. There were no official, you know, Astonville Lions clubs on the West Coast. I think you guys had a chance to speak with Chris, right, from Seattle. This was prior to them. And, you know, I was a Premier League follower, you know, would catch games on television, things like that. But I never took the time to pick a team. You know, my local sports heritage growing up were the Oakland teams here in the East Bay, the Oakland Raiders, Golden State Warriors, Oakland A's. Then I started following and became a season ticket holder of MLS San Jose Earthquakes in the early 2000s. And once I started learning more and more about the game, because I didn't have any history playing the game at all growing up or anything like that. But as I learned more from friends about the game itself, it just got more and more fascinating to me. Once you understand the strategies and what's involved and what the players are trying to do. And then I started watching Premier League games when the standard of play is just like night and day, right, compared to MLS. So I was excited to to watch Premier League games, and I started watching like in the mid 2000s. But I said, you know, I think I need to pick a team. This isn't any fun, really, if you're not actually a supporter of a team. But that was one choice. I think a lot of people, maybe you guys know, it's a choice an American shouldn't take lightly. Because I wanted to be like my hometown team in the States. I mean, the Oakland Raiders are they're my nemesis and my love. It's like they already moved out of Oakland twice, and somehow I still can't shake them, even though I'd want to hate them at times. While I was doing all that, I was actually a volunteer at a local Bay Area children's hospice. And during that volunteer time working, I had learned about this organization called Acorns in the UK. This was before I became a Villa supporter. And then as I was doing research on Villa, I hear this talk about Villa is looking to have Acorns put on their shirt rather than a paid sponsor. I'm thinking, Acorns, where have I heard that before? And sure enough, it was the same organization that I had learned about previously when I was volunteering here. And right then and there, I said, I think the team, I'm not going to be picking a team. The team just chose me. Because my heart was in that volunteer work. And ever since then, Villa chose me. That's how I always say it. And I've been a supporter since then. And then shortly after that, I really wanted to connect with other Villa supporters. And that's when I started trying to look up, are there any supporter groups I could join? And there weren't any on the Villa webs. There weren't any on the West Coast of the United States. I said, gosh, maybe I'll just start one. And so I went ahead and started one. And there was just a couple of us, expats. And then you get the way social media works, right, these days. You get the word out that you've started a Lions Club. And I started hearing from people from all over the state of California, but mostly expats. Oh, I can't believe it. There's a Villa supporters group here. This is awesome. Sign me up. And a couple of years went by, and then we had a couple hundred people on our list. But we were spread out. California is a huge state, and we were spread out geographically by hundreds of miles. And so getting together was very difficult. So there were pockets of us getting together at different pubs. And then San Diego, I think, was the first one. There was just a solid group in Southern California and San Diego and LA. And we just were encouraging each other to just start new branches. You guys should start your own branch down there and get a pub located. And sure enough, San Diego started theirs like 5 years. See, they started theirs in like 2014, and then LA started one in 2015. I think Seattle started theirs right around that time as well. And shortly after that, we had several Lions clubs on the West Coast, and it's been awesome to continue to try to grow. I mean, you guys know this as well. You know, there's still this traditional Big Six crowd of American fans that have joined supporting teams like Liverpool. Like the pub we meet at is the Kezar Pub in San Francisco. It's primarily a Liverpool supporter. They have a huge Liverpool supporters group there. But we hold our own, and they know that they always know that we're there. And the owner there has really kind of encouraged our group to continue, and meeting there, and is always opening the bar early for us. And so we feel solid there. We're just always trying to get more people out to the pub, especially on these days when there's early morning games. Most of our games are at 7 a.m. This was an earlier one today. So getting people out to the pubs earlier in the morning has been our biggest challenge. So we have a lot of people that are signed up to be part of the group, but we have maybe a smaller group of like a dozen folks that we see for every match day. Unfortunately, since COVID, though, we haven't been able to meet at our pub, the Kezar. And so we've been doing a lot of, we've done some Zoom meetups, you know, meeting on Zoom and watching the game together that way. So we're really hoping for, to be able to get back to the pub sooner rather than later. You know, we missed our North America meetup this in 2020, which was supposed to be in Toronto. A lot of us were already booked and ready to go. And COVID hit. They had to postpone that. We're hoping that that'll be rescheduled shortly. It's been a great group, and I don't know how many other North America chairmen you've talked to, but we've kind of become this great network of supporter groups. And when we do our annual North America meetup in a different city across the country, it's amazing how many people will travel to go watch a game on a television and to be together. And we have regular folks from the Kidderminster Lions Club from the UK. I think they've come over for every one of them. And they're a season ticket holder. And they'll fly to America for a weekend to hang with us to watch the game on television. It's a lot of great fun. And one of the biggest things we do for our annual meetup is we raise money for Acorns. We kind of started doing this back in one of Villa's early preseason visits. We did small raffles and auctions. We did it to raise money for Acorns. And I think the first time we did it, you know, we raised maybe $1,000, sent it over. But then our most recent meetup, we raised over $12,000 on a weekend doing a live auction and raffle. And so it's something that we enjoy doing every year, and the guys and gals all get really enthusiastic about it. That's kind of our story.
That's such an inspiring story, and it's amazing how the whole Acorns theme is tied in, as that was a Villa sponsor. So this club, you must have started this club talking 12 years ago, around that, so around the Martin O'Neill era, which was our last kind of golden age in the Premier League, where we were close to winning things and on the brink of Champions League football, et cetera, et cetera. So how would you rank the current side compared to where you started? And obviously, I know COVID's around, but are you enjoying the football more now, or do you still reflect on the old days?
I'm enjoying the football now. I mean, the old days were great. And then, of course, the history, you know, learning about the history, even though I wasn't a supporter back then. But, you know, people ask me, like, what's been my best and most exciting Villa moment as a supporter? I was able to get over in 2019 for the playoff final. That was my best Villa day ever. And as an American sports fan, I mean, people, you know, American sports fans, the general American sports fan doesn't really understand the experience of at a game like that. To be at Wembley with 80,000+ people, you know, half of them Villa fans, and that game, half of them Derby fans. I flew over there for the weekend to go to that game. It was a holiday weekend, and here in the States, Memorial Day weekend. And it was funny, the story goes, I was really debating whether to pay the money. And it was, it could be, because once we knew we made it to the final, you know, you have to start booking your travel and everything. And it was going to be expensive no matter which way I did it. And I was talking to my wife about it. I said, should I do this? I really want to go. Should I do it? Oh, maybe I shouldn't. That's a lot of money. And I said, I might regret it if we lose. And you know what my wife said, who is also a Villa supporter? She said, yeah, but if they win, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. And I said, okay, I guess I'm going. And it was great. And I met up with a bunch of other North American guys that I knew were going to be there. And it was an amazing weekend in London. But since I became a supporter, I think my first trip to Villa Park was in 2012. And I usually try to get back over there every year. I think this and just because of COVID, I wasn't able to make it back for a game this year. We actually had I was bringing my whole family this time. We have two daughters, and we were set to come out in April of 2020. We had three matches that we had tickets for that we were going to. One of them was Liverpool away. And we had to cancel the trip at the last minute. So unfortunately, that happened. But I'm really enjoying the team we have right now, and just trying to soak in every minute of it.
I can only imagine just like having that trip planned, especially, you know, when you have your family just who's also, you know, into it and like supporting as well, just being canceled. But I'm really glad that you were able to go to that playoff final. I remember that day well. I was at Legends in New York, which, you know, you've been to the meetup there, so you remember it. And it was just an unreal atmosphere. Probably say, like, you know, if I was not going to be at the game, that's one of the places I'd like to be. But, you know, you talked about like these expats kind of, you know, getting together. You've kind of located a few folks, but you've also, it's so clear through the social media presence that the California Lions have, you know, grown so much, especially like the folks in the Bay where, you know, you're sort of head honcho there. So thinking about like growing those numbers, have you found it's been like a little bit of recruitment on your end, or are people just sort of finding their way to you?
A little of both, a little of both. There's a lot of, especially the American fans, the people who have adopted Aston Villa, often when I first meet them, the first comment is always, gosh, I didn't even know that there were other Villa fans around. Because, you know, you don't, I try to wear my Villa top, my Villa shirt around as much as I can, because that actually, I mean, I've had plenty of people spot me and stop me. Are you a Villa supporter? And they'll want to talk, right? But there's so many Villa supporters that are isolated. And eventually, you know, we might get connected, or if I get onto a forum or something like that and hear somebody shoot something out saying, hey, are there any Villa supporters in the Bay Area? I usually jump on it right away and try to get a hold of that person. And we also do that within our North America network, right? If I hear that someone's trying to find Villa supporters in the Pacific Northwest, I'll shoot a message to them and say, contact Chris Fetters in Seattle. Here's his contact information. So we're all doing that for each other in the United States or in North America, because we've gotten to know each other well enough now. But it is hard. It is hard because we're kind of isolated in general, because we're not as well known to American sports fans. I think this year is changing, and I really wish we were at the pub this year, this past season, because of COVID, we could be out and actively showing people, hey, consider us, consider this group to join. So I'm really disappointed that we're having to watch games, you know, remotely from each other instead of at the pub and stirring up more energy. But we keep working at it. And I've gotten some American friends to join, get interested, or hear about people saying, hey, I have a friend who works for the Oakland A's baseball team. And he was telling me he had a coworker that wanted to follow a Premier League team. And he said, the first person who brings me their team, brings me a team shirt, that's the team I'm going to support. And my friend got him an Aston Villa shirt immediately, and he's on board. So it just takes things like that. And then coming to meetups, coming and meeting other people, and when they see the kind of connections that we have with each other, they really like the camaraderie. Like at the Minnesota, and I wish you could have been there. It was just such a great time. And every time we have one of those, we meet more people that, oh, wow, I live in that area. You know, can you connect me with so-and-so? And slowly but surely, we will add people to the fold. But yeah, it takes a little work.
Actually, my question isn't necessarily Villa related. Well, it is, but it's more like American sports related. How does, you know, watching soccer live compared to watching like American football and baseball and basketball live in terms of like the atmosphere? Because obviously with COVID and stuff, we missed the whole sporting atmosphere. Now that's a question to both of you, actually, because obviously, you know, you're both Americans. I'm outnumbered today, so it's just quite an interesting to see where soccer ranks in terms of like atmosphere.
You know, I could tell you, at least from my experience, like I'm explaining to you, you know, I think my sporting experiences for my life, English football has been superior to American sports. And, you know, it's a small thing, but to me, it's a big thing. You know, you hear the term cheerleader, right, in American sports, meaning you have people who are getting paid or whatever to tell people and supporters and the fans when to make noise. And you never see that. You don't need that in a football match, right? In a proper football match. It's more spontaneous. You feel the energy in the crowd. Other than maybe like some college sports where you sometimes see a little bit of spontaneous energy, Americans are just used, I don't know how else to describe it other than Americans are used to having people tell them when to make noise. And it just doesn't make sense to me anymore. I don't know if that answers your question. That's a huge difference. There's a passion in a proper football crowd, right? That's what I see the difference is.
No, 100%. And I think when I was younger, deciding between, I'm New York based, so deciding between the Jets or the Giants, I think one of the things I actually really liked, my dad told me about, he's like, the Giants don't have cheerleaders because like they believe the crowd needs to, like the game needs to be the focus, and like the crowd needs to do it themselves. And that kind of like stuck with me. So I'm thankful for a lot of reasons I'm not a Jets fan, but like that's, that's definitely one of the things I really love about the team. So I only have one more question. I'm not sure if Pascal have any others after, but you know, the last thing I'll sort of ask is we are having this incredible season by our standards, especially given circumstances last year. So just in your opinion, you know, having seen this team grow, evolve, come together, you know, in so many different iterations, how far do you think this team can go this year? And what are your personal goals for, you know, this Villa side? Hopefully if they meet them or not, you know, we'll see. But
I think for me, you know, I know a lot of people are talking about European football and such, and which excites me to hear us even talking about it. But I am still just, I'm taking this more as a, I know you're talking about like goals for the season. I'm trying to really soak in moment by moment at this experience that we're having this year, because it's been so many years. The majority of my years as a Villa supporter has been a very, very difficult. And I'm trying to enjoy almost every game week to week. Because even the games that we lose, the feeling after we lose is so much different than it has been like in the last, say, half dozen years. There's still this sense of hope. I can remember so many days, so many mornings leaving the pub in despair, even for the coming game, right? And this year is completely different. And it's part of being a supporter, right? You're going to go through those seasons where it's been, you know, the whole relegation and spending years in the championship. So I'm just trying to enjoy every moment this year. And if we don't make European football, I am actually fine with that. I am just thrilled with what we've done so far. I just hope that we continue to keep pushing. And I hope wherever we land, I think it's going to be a great step forward into even greater things.
All right, so very quickly, final question from me. Where does Aston Villa rank between Villa and the other teams that you follow?
Well, I know that Aston Villa has become my home side. I mean, it's like, it's right up there with the teams I grew up with, which is even amazing for me to even think about for a team that I've followed since, you know, the mid-2000s versus teams that I've followed my whole life that I live here locally with. I feel the same passion for Villa as I do as any of my home sides. And truthfully, there's not too many teams that I would get out of bed at 4 a.m. consistently to watch. So I might even give an edge to Villa right now compared to my home sides. Because there's some parts of American sports that I've become more disenchanted with after having more experience with the Premier League experience. So I don't know. That's probably the best way I can answer. I do feel like Villa's my home side. I mean, I support them as much or even more so than my home teams here. Well, especially the Raiders. I already told you guys, the Las Vegas Raiders now.
Oh, man. Well, that really does it for, you know, my questions, Pascal's questions. But Rick, just thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate you taking the time. I just looked at the clock. We're going a little bit longer than we had planned, but you know, that's what happens when you're having a good conversation. It's been really fascinating for us. We really appreciate you taking the time, especially given so early.
The invitation.
Oh, of course. You know, we want to talk to as many, you know, Lions Club chairmen and Villa supporters, you know, who are outside the UK as humanly possible. So even if this just means like, you know, once a week having these chats, you know, this is why we do this. It's for us, and you know, it's fun for us in that way. So This is the part of the show we, you know, always give a little bit of a space for our guests to throw any plugs in, be it, you know, philanthropic things you're doing, your social media pages for the California Villains, anything you just want to discuss or share with the nice people.
Well, just note, keep your eyes out on social media for when the Toronto North America meetup eventually gets scheduled. I know Brett Bates is anxiously waiting for some good word on the COVID front that it will make it easier for people, it's more safe for people to travel. And for us here in California, we have, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and also have a website, avsccalifornia.com, and great, all our information's there.
Fantastic. And, you know, especially once all of this sort of madness in the world blows over a little bit, people are feeling a bit safer. And, you know, the coast is clear, so to speak. Hopefully folks are getting out and seeing you guys, you know, hopefully catching a few matches with you in the Bay or, you know, any of the other California-based Lions clubs. It's a great state. And for folks who haven't been, I definitely highly suggest it. But that really does it again. Pascal, anything you'd like to share with the nice folks?
Nope. Well, we'll be starting a YouTube channel soon. So, yeah, get subscribing to that as well. We'll definitely do a big announcement on Twitter as well. So, yeah, just keep following and supporting.
Yeah, and from me, I know I posted this on to the Twitter page, but we are raising money for both the Gambia Lions, who are trying to put together a little bit of funds for equipment for their now state-sanctioned, which is so fantastic, Villa Academy, and the Ghana Lions as well, launching a bit of a bigger GoFundMe. They're trying to fund an actual plot of land they can have for a football pitch. They just don't have one right now. We know it's a long-term goal, but as long as we can get people involved little by little, that's going to make all the difference. But other than that, you know, we thank everyone for listening, liking, commenting, subscribing, sharing with their friends. This is always so fun. If you ever want to interact with us, be that on Twitter, reach out. We're always happy to chat with new folks, especially from all over the world and Villa supporters. But yeah, Rick, thanks again. And if no one has anything else, up the Villa.
Up the Villa. Okay.